Cradio, nourishing the soul of the digital generation.
Hi, I'm Sarah and you're listening to Cradio. Today, I'm joined from Melbourne by Anna Crone. Anna holds a number of roles, including Overseas Student Officer and Academic Skills Counsellor at the John Paul II Institute for Marriage and Family in Melbourne, convener of Anima Catholic Women's Movement, Women's Liaison Officer for the Archdiocese of Melbourne, and tutor in spirituality and nursing ethics at Australian Catholic University, just to name a few. Anna, thank you for taking the time to speak with me today.
Thanks, Sarah. Thank you.
I had to catch my breath after rattling off just a few of your activities. It seems appropriate that today I'm talking to you about the role of women in the church. You keep yourself quite busy.
I actually think, Sarah, my sort of crazy life is a little bit like many women's lives, I think, today. They do multi-skill a bit, don't they, and multitask. And I think that's part of why so many women are sort of a bit burnt out, and I guess why we started the Anima Women's Network, because we realised that women were juggling home, sometimes a career, sometimes educational opportunities as well, and in a way that is even more complex than I think the way men pursue their lives, women were finding that this led to spiritual and sort of emotional burnout. So we started a sort of spiritual women's network to deal with women like me, I guess, who were trying to be involved on a number of fronts.
It's definitely true. I see in all aspects of church life and all aspects of society, women are quite heavily involved and active in keeping themselves very busy. And we live in a society where many leading organisations are headed by women. And so as a result, there's this conversation that keeps coming up about the perceived lack of women in leadership positions within the church. And I guess they're specifically referring to bishops, priests, etc. How are we to explain this?
Well, I think that it's quite a complex question, Sarah, because I think women have had significant leadership roles in the church, but in a way that's different to the way men have leadership. Unfortunately, I think in the last 200 years particularly, women have become somewhat disillusioned with the areas that they were familiar with, and there's good reasons for that. Sometimes they were treated with great inequality. And instead of really exploring what we call the feminine genius, what is it about women in particular that is significant, their moral leadership that they have instinctively and often have responded to in faith, in a sense that's become quite scrambled with secular society. So many people outside the church see the ministerial priesthood and I suppose the leadership of men in the bureaucracy of the church as a sign that women are not welcome in the church. But in fact, even today, in this diocese, for instance, it's women who are doing some of the groundbreaking work. And I think what is lacking is sometimes a positive role for them to work through and develop, and also, I think, recognition. I think one of the biggest things I hear every day is these women doing great work, but there's a lack of recognition and appropriate support. So I think the church has certainly encouraged many, many women to be involved with the faith and evangelisation and all types of issues, but quite often it's hard for both the church and the public to recognise those roles.
You sort of alluded to it earlier and you mentioned this thing called the feminine genius. But the real struggle in our society is there seems to be this resentment of the idea of gender roles, and there's sort of a blurring between this idea of equality, and you did say there was this experience of inequality, but it's sort of been blurred with sameness. So
yeah, that's exactly right. I think one of the things we try to speak of is what we call the new feminism, which is, I suppose, a movement, an intellectual and social cultural movement in the church particularly, it's very strong in the Catholic Church around the world, to kind of recover the gift of being particularly a woman and all that goes with that without falling into the stereotypes which actually are obstacles and limit women's opportunities, but at the same time acknowledging how women's experience, women's bodies, women's obstacles and women's difficulties are quite particular to women, although obviously we do share many, many things in common with men as well. We're both equally human. It's a holding together of those tensions, which I think the new feminism tries to do, and tries to do calmly and with a great deal of realism. And I think that's one of the features of the new feminist movement, is it tries to say, let's look at the whole thing very realistically, and let's hold together the fact that women have unique bodily experiences, unique emotional experiences that come from being incarnated in the way that they are, that need to be acknowledged. And I think sometimes very strong forms of secular feminism have failed to do that. In other words, important aspirations like motherhood, not just biological motherhood, but the whole emotional experience of mothering people, nurturing people, has sometimes been denigrated by the very people that should be promoting it in order to achieve, you know, a career option. So I guess new feminism certainly acknowledges that women have suffered discrimination or violence and obstacles created because men fail to understand women, and sometimes they build those obstacles in cultural ways. But it also acknowledges that women are in need of grace and faith, so we're not perfect. So you can see that we take a slightly different position to the more secular feminist vision.
So for those who might look at that and say, okay, well, that's all well and good, but women are still capable of contributing, say, to the decision-making processes within the church, and they might feel that women are locked out of that because of the hierarchical structure or the perceived structure.
Yeah, I think that it's important to understand what the church is. The church, for instance, is a feminine entity itself. We call the church she. And I think the hierarchical structure that we know that goes from the ministerial priesthood up to the bishops and the pope is only one aspect of the church's entity. I certainly think that women have great leadership roles in terms of their contribution to understanding of theology. And I work myself with some great female theologians who have contributed enormously to our understanding of the modern world and of tradition. So someone like Dr. Tracy Rowland, who is one of the leading Australian theologians and who has contributed to an Australian profile of theology, and she's acknowledged around the world. So I think we are seeing great contributions from women like that, and there are many others, being recognised and respected and admired. What's become difficult is in that great theological reflection or intellectual work, how that fits into the development of the teaching of the church. Now, we know that it does, because, for instance, in the Catechism of the Catholic Church, there's the then Cardinal Ratzinger and Archbishop Schoenborn deliberately included references to people like Teresa of Avila, Saint Therese, and some of the women theologians who were not theologians in a professional sense, but have contributed enormously to the theological insight of the church. So, in fact, they have been contributing to the teaching of the church, just by a way that's not necessarily as predictable or as recognised as it might have been.
And I know there are many that argue that the church pioneered equality for women. Is that something that you believe?
I think if we look, and there's a great deal of great scholarship going on at the moment by patristic scholars and studies of the mothers of the early church, for instance, who are uncovering the fact that women did play an enormous role in the early church. And we know that women saw Christianity as incredibly liberating, because in the Roman Empire and in some of the pagan cultures, they were considered property. They were considered less than fully adult or human by the pagan cultures. And we know in the life of Jesus himself that he went beyond sort of cultural expectations in calling women to follow him. So by uncovering both the biblical and the early patristic and the medieval studies, we've really discovered a whole strand of women's advance in terms of education. Christian marriage, which enabled men only to marry one wife, was a huge advance in the lives of women. Women were involved in healthcare. The order of widows in the early church were enormously influential in the social justice of the church. So we know that probably in the modern era, we've lost connection to some of those great realization that Christ liberated women, that made them attracted to that and made them even go to quite extreme lengths to follow him. Think of the early martyrs like St. Cecilia, who rebelled against the system, her cultural system, by saying, I'm not going to marry, I want to give my life to Jesus Christ. And she was a little, you know, 13 or 14-year-old girl who said, I want to make this choice to follow Christ, and I will do that in the face of my family, in the face of my society. So really, women made quite radical changes to their lives, pursued research and education and study and prayer and spiritual development because they were inspired by Christianity. And there's a great German philosopher and historian called Hannah Barbara Girl Falkovich, who writes in German, unfortunately, so a lot of her writing's not available, who in 1 hour gave a brilliant talk about how Christianity really was good news for women, and how from the time of Jesus onwards, it enabled women to pursue their vocations in the most fulfilling way. unfortunately, that type of scholarship is rare and it's often hard to find, but it's there, and it gives us great encouragement that if we really take it in both hands, Christianity respects the dignity of women in a way that quite often is ignored by a secular culture which over-sexualizes women, expects women to objectify their bodies, forces women to make decisions which are very going against their own natures as mothers. These things are oppressing women. And again, Christianity has the opportunity to reach out to women and to provide healing and support and good news.
It's very true, and I think it's certainly been my own experience, and I know many other women who I know who belong to the church. I just wanted to know, you mentioned St. Cecilia earlier. Who are some of the other examples, as a woman who is doing a lot of great work for the church in Australia and beyond, who are the examples that you look to personally for how authentic leadership can be lived out as a woman in the church?
Well, that's a really great question. There's enormous. We in the Anima Women often have a symposium or conference where we try to unpack the life of one of these great women just as inspiration, because they're great examples for men and women. So across the history, I guess there's a couple that pop out to me. One is an amazing woman, Saint Macrina, who was the sister of Saint Basil, the great early father, and his brother Gregory. Now, she really inspired them as bishops. And in a way, there was a kind of family church, which we're now discovering much more. She inspired. And she was a very early mother of the church. And there's a great scholar, Dr. Anna Silvis, in New England, who's doing terrific work on St. Macrina. And there's lots of exciting stories coming out of that. In the Middle Ages, I suppose Hildegard of Bingen is a real inspiration to me. What a wonder woman she was. And the more we discover about her insights, her medical advances, her spiritual insights, her music, we can see, you know, forget Superwoman of the 1980s, this woman was outstanding. And she was also a leader in the church. She inspired bishops and others around her. She wrote to Bernard of Clairvaux. But she was a leader in a humble way, which is quite different from a very aggressive notion of leadership. It's actually about obedience and the faith. And there's quite a big difference between those two concepts. That was a topic that was discussed at Vatican II, the idea of obedience to faith, which we're all called to, men and women, boys and girls, and the difference between that and submission, which is not what... Submission is where somebody unequally dominates you, which is not what we want to see, and unfortunately many women have suffered from this. Teresa of Avila is a great inspiration for me. She's a woman of just such profound influence. I often find myself, you know, going back and seeing her contributions and her writing, a wise, wise, balanced woman. And many others, Blessed Edith Stein, St. Teresa Benedicta of the Cross. And in Australia, we have some wonderful women, saintly women too. Obviously, St. Mary MacKillop, but two other amazing women. One, a laywoman, Caroline Chisholm. She was a very holy, outstanding leader in both society and in our faith. And also, Dr. Sister Mary Glowry, and I've got the great privilege of having a quite intimate relationship with her because I'm on the committee for the cause of her canonization, and her cause has just been introduced in India. She was a woman who was one of the first presidents of the Catholic Social Guild that went on to become the Catholic Women's League in Victoria and Wagga Wagga. And she then went from there to training in medicine. She discovered Hildegard of Bingen, we found out the other day, so she knew about something that most English-speaking people didn't know. And then she felt called to help the women and children of India. So she went and joined a religious order, a Dutch religious order in Gunter in India, and began the Catholic Healthcare Association in India and built a hospital. Died in the 1950s of breast cancer. But an astonishing woman who is a great inspiration. And once you get involved with her life, she doesn't leave you alone, we found out. She's like a lot of those saintly people. She doesn't let you go once you start investigating her life. And she just came from rural Victoria, was a very good scholar, but with the encouragement of her father, and this raises some really interesting questions of how fathers are very important influences in the life of girls, so we're not anti-men at all, that she then went on and became a scholar at Melbourne University. And in the recent months, Melbourne University has acknowledged her as one of their great alumni. So I think she's evangelizing Melbourne University today, which is a really inspirational thing to see.
That's quite an incredible lineup. We certainly don't have a shortage.
The more we look at our history, the more we realise, and for a lot of women who've gone into the secular feminist world, is they see depictions and icons of saints, of women that look a bit sooky, you know, they're a bit pale and pasty. And when I was a young girl, I was a bit of a tomboy, so I like people like Joan of Arc, whose sanctity is not sooky. You know, I think sometimes we've unfortunately had influences from very sentimentalist eras that make us think Christian womanhood is kind of pale and pasty. But I think once you look into the lives of some of the great women that I've just mentioned, there, and everyone, I think, finds a kind of mentor out of the lives of the saints. That's what's so great about Catholic faith, I think. It's like having a huge family where there's all these interesting uncles and aunts who can tap into our particular temperament and personality and inspire us, who face some of the obstacles that we faced in life and inspire us. And we're still in touch with them, and that's the great beauty, I think, of Catholic faith, is this kind of living community of the saints and those that are living. And I just found that made me realise, look, there is so much work for us to explore in the lives of women in the church. And I think that's something that both Pope Benedict and Pope Francis have indicated. We're just on the road to unpacking the role of women in the church. And it doesn't necessarily have to look identical to the way men work in the church, because in our own teaching of the faith, we understand that there's a complementarity between men and women, which can be very, very fruitful, and obviously is modelled in the way good, healthy families run, or in the way some of the great saints worked. So, for instance, St. Clare and St. Francis were complementary. St. Teresa had St. John of the Cross. Once you take those glasses and look at history, you start to see complementarity in some of the really great movements in the church, Mary MacKillop and Julian Tennyson Woods. It almost always, there's this kind of collaboration which really shows equality between men and women can be a truly great thing, both in social terms but also in terms of its contribution to the church.
Okay, so you'll be coming up to Sydney soon on the 27th of November to speak.
Yeah, next week. next week, very soon.
Next week.
Yeah.
So that's the Order of Malta's lecture series, and you're speaking on The Hour of Women is Approaching. Is the Church Ahead or Behind?
Ah, it's a good question, isn't it?
So could you elaborate more on what you'll be speaking about?
What I've decided to use is in Pope John Paul II, 25 years ago, released a very important apostolic letter called Mulieres Dignitatis, on the vocation and dignity of women. And in this, he really wanted to speak to Christian women and say, look, there's so much about your contributions to the church and to the world that we failed. And I think it's important not to say everything was always dreamy in the church. Women have suffered enormously, even in the hands of the church. For instance, some of those poor nuns who worked, you know, endless hours without proper resources, women who've been at home without much support. There were times when I think in the church people were blind to the needs of women, and that's something that's a result of ignorance and sin, let's face it, that happens. I think it's important to acknowledge that, but I think it's also to say that despite those obstacles, there are many great women that John Paul wants us to sort of take as starting points in our exploration of possible vocation of women in the 21st century. And that's a little bit what I want to look at. How well are we doing? And I think there's some areas in the church where we do have to take a serious look. For instance, I think sometimes in the church we're very... I don't sort of belong to any one institution, so I'm a bit lucky in that respect. But and their leadership is not acknowledged, so it's often given second place in, say, church bureaucracies, church organisations. And I think it's good to just check how we're going on some of the points that John Paul II brought up, and also the points that Pope Francis and Pope Benedict have spoken of. Just say, how are we going? Are we really leading the way? We should be leading the way in encouraging the dignity and vocation of women, not catching up with the secular world. We should be actually at the forefront of it. Because, again, so many members of our church are women, so many of them. And I think we have lost a lot of women because the gospel, as it's truly meant to be understood, has probably not been heard. I know that your radio is doing a great deal of work to try and bring that sort of voice out into the world again. But I think there's a couple of generations in our life in Australia who've missed that message and stop the practice of their faith or only have a very undeveloped understanding of their faith. So I think new feminism is part of new evangelization. So that's what I hope we're going to talk about next week.
Great. Well, it sounds like it's a discussion that's certainly worth having. So yeah. That's in the crypt of St. Mary's Cathedral on the 27th of November.
We'll have lots of Q&A too, which is going to be scary because there's going to be things that we have to try and talk about. But, you know, I think one of the great things about New Feminism is that it aims to listen and it's really open to hearing what people's experiences and comments and thoughts are. And it's very much a work in progress, so it'll be fun to speak to everybody and hear from them as well.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Anna.
Thanks, Sarah. It was great to speak to you.
That was Anna Crone speaking to Sarah about the new feminism and the role of women in the church. Anna will be giving a lecture entitled "The Hour of Woman is Approaching. Is the church ahead or behind that moment?" as part of a series being organised by the Order of Malta on the 27th of November 2013 in Sydney. For more information or to RSVP, visit orderofmalta.org.au. And for more talks, interviews and shows, visit cradio.org.au. cradio.org.au